On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to The Lines Between Us, our weekly look into inequality in the Baltimore region. Sheila Ebeline is president of the Glenham Belhar Community Association in Northeast Baltimore. In February, we talked to her about what it takes to sustain middle-class neighborhoods in the city.
What I've seen over the past 20 years will be an individual move in. They'll invest money in their house. It'll look fantastic. They'll be great neighbors. They'll either get married or enter into a relationship. Many times after that, they will have a small child. And somewhere between age 2 and 4, the for sale sign will go up.
Enrollment started ticking up in Baltimore City Schools in 2008, the first increase in 4 decades. There are nearly 3,000 more students enrolled now than there were 5 years ago. But not everyone is on board. A 2011 report on the connection between schools and community development, written by the Goldsacker Foundation in Baltimore, found that, quote, fairly or unfairly, neighborhood schools often were perceived as liabilities. Rarely were they among the assets that neighborhoods used to promote themselves, unquote. In a few minutes, we'll talk to several parents about why they did decide to send their children to city public schools. First, here's Sheila Ebeline on the options she felt she had for her daughter.
One was picking up and moving to the county. Another one was private education. The third was public education. When we made that decision, would have been going into kindergarten, and my daughter would have been 5, so that would have been about 14 years ago. I had been watching the standardized test scores just fall and fall and fall at the school that she would have been attending, at the Baltimore City Public School. And I didn't like the trend. Now, they were remarkably high when I first got married and moved in here because I was tracking them from even then. And it just didn't seem like that slide was stopping. Additionally, that school was relocated catty corner to the preschool program that she was in. And I would park along the street and listen to the children who were being dismissed. And I was really upset to find that there was a lot of profanity and disruptive behavior. And it was an environment that I really didn't want my kids subject to. At that point, I was really concerned. My daughter was very timid. I didn't really feel like that environment would be conducive to learning, and I thought it would be really stressful for her in particular. I was privately educated, and my husband was publicly educated. So he was a little less inclined to go to parochial school or whatever right away. But we determined that we didn't want to move because we liked the neighborhood. We had a mailbox on the corner and a bus ran down the street, and his parents lived in Parkville. My grandmother lived in Parkville. We were just close to where we needed to be. So one day, when I was picking up Elise in the spring from her preschool program, I had him come with me and I just put the windows of the car down, and he almost like had a heart attack and fell in the street. And he went, wait a minute. And I said, these are children that are K-8. And he just was shocked. And I didn't think I really raised my children in an environment that was overprotective, but I made choices about what they were involved with and who they were around and things like that. So he was on board after that, and that's how we started down the path to parochial school education. What I find, and I really do feel strongly about this, people are concerned about the education of their children only secondary to their safety. I think everyone realizes that it impacts their future, their earnings, income, their quality of life, their opportunities, everything. You know, so I think that every parent realizes that the best education that you can get for your child is worth everything to them, and they are willing to give up a lot of things to do that.
Hamilton resident Sheila Ebelin. She spoke with Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan in February. On 88.1, I'm Sheila Cass. This is The Lines Between Us on Maryland Morning. And with me now are three Baltimore parents with children in Baltimore public schools. Stephanie Sterling is part of a group called Village Parents that encourages parents in Charles Village to get acquainted with their two neighborhood public schools, Barclay Elementary Middle and Margaret Brandt Elementary Middle. Stephanie's daughters attend Margaret Brandt. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Amy Pohl helped start Creative City Public Charter School, which opens later this month in Southern Park Heights. Disclosure, MA was the first producer of Maryland Morning when we started in 2006. MA, welcome home.
Thanks for having me back.
Kalila Harris has daughters enrolled at Roland Park Elementary Middle School. She works at the University of Baltimore helping high school students, including graduates of city schools, get ready for college. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I want to hear briefly how you came to the decisions you did about where to send your children to school, how old your children were when you started thinking about it, which options you felt you had. And Stephanie, what kind of options did you feel like you had?
At that point, before my children were school age, I felt like we had public school option, charter school option, really. We had no specific plans about moving, even though I think that is fair. People often do that, move to the county. And I first sort of became aware of our neighborhood public school through Village Parents. I think they had a series of events where we could held in the school with panels around urban education. I don't think they were specifically related to our particular schools, but they got us in the building in any event. And, you know, once I was in the door and saw how sort of charming the building was and that had a nice atmosphere, everything sort of started there. And then I met the people and I spent some time in the building and found that it was a really nice place to be, a place that I felt like I could send my child. You know, when my daughter was four, I still put in a charter application for the pre-K program at Montessori, and, you know, we weren't selected via lottery. So, you know, that option kind of became a non-option. Uh-huh. So, you know, but luckily I was happy with our other choices, so we went forward with that.
Now, Kalila, your children were not in city schools at first?
Correct. They were at an independent school. They attended Friends School of Baltimore, my two older daughters.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So how did that transform into their being in the city public schools?
Yeah, so if I kind of take a step back into how early I was thinking about education, when I came to Baltimore, I was 16, and as a college student at Morgan State University, the first experience I had with city schools was at Lexington Terrace Elementary School. And I was able to see the disparities in education afforded in the neighborhood that we subsequently moved our family to. Our family, when I had my first daughter, moved to Heritage Crossing, which is built on top of where Lexington Terrace used to be. And the schools there we knew were not performing well. As our daughters began to reach that age of four, as the young lady described in the piece we listened to, there had not been a big change in terms of outcomes for the schools and walking distance. And the community itself had not changed very much since we lived there. And so it was difficult to decide to send our daughters to a school where they would likely be the most well-off or have so many resources and advantages that the teachers would not be able to differentiate in a way that supported our children at the high end and other students who didn't have the same privileges. So we struggled and really made sacrifices to send our students to independent schools. And when the recession hit, it impacted our family like it did many others. And we had to make a decision about being able to afford tuition for two children, recognizing we had a third daughter who was approaching school age. And so my husband and I separated last year. And at that point, I made a very quick decision to move into Roland Park so that we had automatic access to Roland Park Elementary School based on its reputation.
So, you were confident of Roland Park in a way that you weren't of your local schools.
I was not confident.
And if you're going to move to Roland Park, why not move to Rogers Forge? Why stay in the city?
I am a city girl. I'm a native New Yorker. And so moving into a community that is not as accessible to city life was not necessarily the option I wanted. And I really want my children to have a diversity of experiences that does not prevent them from having experience with people from all walks of life. So it was important to be in a place where we could still access city life, but also access people who look like us, live like us, from all walks of life, and frankly, from all socioeconomic backgrounds as I had when I grew up. And for me, it was really more about safety. I did not want to put my children in a situation where I had to make decisions about whether or not they could go to the homes of their best friends, or whether or not I would allow their best friends' families into my home because of the issues in the community. At a minimum, I was confident that the neighborhood was of a mixed income at least.
Emma, your daughter Mira is turning 5, right?
In 2 days, yeah.
When did you start thinking about schools?
When she was 2.
And the neighborhood school for you would have been?
I'd rather actually not say. It was because of looking into that school that I started to look into other options. And I don't want to be disparaging to the school.
Well, let me ask this then. Mm-hmm. Why did you start a charter? Why not enter a lottery for an existing charter
school? Well, so first of all, what I found out about most of the zone schools that I looked into was that they were using practices that I considered and experts consider not beneficial for children. No recess for kindergarten students, for example, cutting arts and other important elements of education in order to focus on test taking and test scores. So when I started looking into the schools that were in the city that had progressive ideals, that had drama, arts, recess guaranteed, I found charter schools. There are 900 families on the waiting list for Montessori Public Charter School. There are 500 children on the waiting list for City Neighbors. There are hundreds on the waiting list for the Green School of Baltimore, all progressive schools. And talking to friends and family, I realized there's a need here. So we formed a nonprofit, Creative City Public Charter School Foundation, and developed a progressive curriculum and applied to the city, and eventually we were granted a charter.
Can I pick up there? So just shifting from charter schools, because I don't think that, and I've run a charter school, so I don't think that charter schools are a panacea. School choice happens outside of charters. When you come mm-hmm. to Baltimore, people ask you what high school you went to, mm-hmm. and they want to make assessments about your class. They want to make assessments about your family's wealth, your family's background.
They're talking about socioeconomic not your academic
not
class.
Not your academic class, your socioeconomic status. So when you talk about school choice and all families having access to high-quality schools, that is a tough decision. You asked me a question about whether or not I would be confident that my students were getting a strong education at the school that they go to right now. My response was no, because I was familiar with the instructional strategies being used at that school, which, in my opinion, weren't ones that facilitated high-order thinking, critical analysis. But the socioeconomic status of the families in that school reflected our own families. And that was really the key decision that I made in a split second of a major family shift. It was not about whether or not that was the most high quality school in Baltimore, yet families fight tooth and nail to move into that neighborhood to get their kids into that school, which is not necessarily providing the best instructional model in Baltimore City. And so I think this conversation, if you peel back the onion, goes beyond socioeconomic status and really connects to the achievement gap and what many frame as the opportunity gap in education, which is prevalent here in Baltimore City. I mean, some of the most successful charters don't look like the complexion of the children who primarily attend public schools in Baltimore City.
Emma, I'll let you jump back in, but I want to remind, or I want to tell our listeners about how we first came to know Stephanie, because you wrote us right after our series Lines Between Us started, Stephanie, and said, "I want Baltimore to know," you wrote, "that we're having a positive experience at just a plain old run-of-the-mill public school," close quote. So what experience are you having that you want people to know about?
Yeah, I identify with so many of the things that Kalila was saying. You know, when we started to make these decisions, it's about safety. It's about the friends and families of your students, and so of your children. And that's really the experience. The experience is that, you know, I visited the school and it was safe, and mm-hmm. I did like the teachers and I did like the administrators, and that I have a group of friends who live within walking distance of me that I knew going in, you know. So I have friends at school. My children have friends at school, or my daughter, I guess. I say my children because my three-year-old is there all the time. And she's welcomed into the pre-K room, and she's welcomed into the kindergarten room, and she really feels ownership of that space because there's such a tight community. And I wish that I could say that it was the same at every school. I think it's clearly not. But, you know, I want people to know that it's possible, you know, to build that community. We've made so many more friends. And I do think that this is all wrapped up in issues of race and class and socioeconomic status. One thing I think, I hesitate to say it, but I think one thing that surprised everybody was how many middle class black families they met that they've become friends with. You know, I think that was a positive. That is a positive that came out. There is a.
I should move to your neighborhood.
There's a house right across the street as well.
All right.
Well, speaking of moving, one of the big challenges and one of the things that felt so unfair about the choices afforded was that you buy your way into a different neighborhood school. Houses in the Roland Park and Mount Washington Elementary School Districts are 50 to 100.
I certainly don't own one.
Right, are $50,000 to $100,000 more than a school, a house across the street that is not in that district. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that really fair public education for all? If you can spend more on housing, you're able to go to a better school. I think we also have to be really careful about what we mean by better schools. You know, mm-hmm. the number one indicator of test scores is parental income. I mean, it reflects, test scores reflect poverty or not. And I think that there need to be different ways of looking at school success other than just
Absolutely.
Test scores, other than just the number of poor children in a school.
Right.
That's not what makes for success.
My daughter could have been in watching movies all school year, and my fourth grader scored advanced on the MSA that
right.
just came home. And I had issues at the school this year for both of my children about being challenged and having rigorous instruction.
At
Roland Park Elementary School. And
one of the best in the city, right?
I hesitate to say best because
Allegedly.
That is relative, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If it's
perception.
About perception, if it's about instruction, however, I could have homeschooled them and I think they would have scored the same on their assessments.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really is about thinking about high quality instruction for all children in all schools.
And
right?
I think that one of the things that you end up seeing is one of the challenges, I was very tempted to join group to improve a neighborhood school and to have access. And I think that would have been another fantastic way to go about it. I saw risks either way. And one of them being that as a charter school, we're able to make some decisions that zone schools aren't able to make that are better for kids.
But I challenge that.
I think that's something that zone schools and charter schools need to unite around is that zone schools should be able to cap a number of students in a class so you can have real differentiation. So you can have, you know, those who are more advanced being challenged and those who need support getting the
there
support.
There are definitely challenges, but we have found ways to accommodate that. Mm-hmm. So this year, we implemented the Success for All curriculum for Johns Hopkins, which means all hands on deck. That means every certified teacher is teaching a small group reading. So, you know, that is one way that we have found to differentiate instruction, short of capping class sizes. This is also the first year, and this is, you know, this goes back to the whole issue of school choice. You don't even have to move into a neighborhood to choose the school if it has space. But, you know, this year, unfortunately, we can't take students. We haven't enrolled students from out of zone, right? So,
because Margaret Brand is basically full.
Because our class size, right? Uh-huh. To sort of, you know, that's a way that we have to address class size, right?
Khalilah, I'm not sure I heard. Did you say you challenged what
MA was saying? Yeah, I challenged the notion that a traditional public school as opposed to a charter school, which in the state of Maryland are not very different in terms of the autonomies that school leadership has around supporting their faculty to implement high quality instruction and frankly in using their budget in Baltimore City, something Dr. Alonzo bought with the Fair Student Funding Formula and that Tisha Edwards will be able to carry through and support because she was a part of the architecture of that strategy to allow school communities to decide how they utilize their dollars and to make some priorities about how they utilize their dollars. I mean, my kids' school, their PTA raises over $100,000, maybe $200,000. So, you know, outside of what is happening inside of the school, there are other things that can be done to support a traditional public school. But first and foremost, the leadership at the school has the privilege of trusting their highly intelligent faculty to decide on curriculum that they are going to use and processes for instruction, not just a curriculum that you can buy off of a shelf, but instructional practices that are either progressive, that might be direct instruction, that might be a combination of the two, that might be art-centered. Schools have the autonomy to make those decisions. I challenge communities and community groups and the school system to work with families to better understand the choices they can make for their children and the demands they can place on their school to provide high quality instruction, and not just feed them with worksheets and not just take a book off the shelf and say read pages 10 to 12 and answer questions 1 through 4. That is a decision of leadership or a lack of leadership. A lack of a backbone to say, we're going to implement best practices that have been proven tried and true. I challenge that charter schools have some magic bullet that they can do inside of their school that traditional schools cannot, because the fact of the matter is that is an excuse, and that also plays into racial and class divides in the city. If you say to me this school that is 99% African-American, that there is 90% of students on free and reduced lunch, cannot do progressive instruction, cannot be allowed to use manipulatives or use the Montessori model or whatever the case may be because they're poor, I challenge you on your ideas around racism and your ideas around inequity.
Kalila Harris. We'll continue the discussion after the break with Kalila, Stephanie Sterling, and Aimee Pohl, who will tell us about the challenges of making her charter school a resource for children in the community where the school is geographically located when the charter enrollment is determined by lottery.
Our goal is to reflect Baltimore City's student population. We have to be really intentional about that in terms of walking door to door everywhere around the neighborhood to tell people there's a school opening. Our goal was to be primarily drawing from Park Heights, but additionally drawing from other areas.
On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. The Lines Between Us will be back in just a bit.
I'm assistant producer Jamila Kay. You're listening to Maryland Morning's The Lines Between Us series on WYPR 88.1 in Baltimore. Visit our website, linesbetweenus.org, to hear more stories, to see maps that reveal the lines in your neighborhood, and to participate in the discussion. Thanks for downloading this week's show. Now back to the podcast.
On 88.1, this is Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to The Lines Between Us. We're picking up a conversation with three parents whose children attend city schools. Kalila Harris, whose daughters attend Roland Park Elementary Middle School. Stephanie Sterling, whose daughter attends Margaret Brandt Elementary Middle School in Charles Village. And Aimee Pohl, who helped start Creative City Public Charter School in Park Heights. Aimee's daughter will be part of that school's inaugural class later this month. Before the break, all three parents laid out what options they felt they had when their children started nearing school age. Just before we stepped away for a break, Kalila Harris questioned the idea that charter schools can provide a quality of curriculum and instruction that neighborhood schools cannot. Let's rejoin the conversation.
I challenge that charter schools have some magic bullet that they can do inside of their school that traditional schools cannot, because the fact of the matter is that is an excuse, and that also plays into racial and class divides in the city. If you say to me this school that is 99% African-American, that there is 90% of students on free and reduced lunch, cannot do progressive instruction, cannot be allowed to use manipulatives or use the Montessori model or whatever the case may be because they're poor, I challenge you on your ideas around racism and your ideas around inequity.
Absolutely.
Because if those children come to school, I challenge the school to look at the children they have, work with them on what the challenges and the opportunities or resources they are lacking, work with community resources to develop those, but also provide them with high quality instruction, and not point the finger or use red herring or straw man proposals about why they cannot, because it is a choice. And any quality school leader is going to be able to rally their troops, build buy-in, listen to their teachers about what they need and what they think will provide a strong culture for their families and their students and for their faculty,
right.
Well, and come together to provide high-quality instruction.
The point I'm making is that depending on what neighborhood you live in, mm-hmm. that's happening or not. And that's wrong. That's wrong.
Absolutely.
That a child in Park Heights doesn't have that opportunity because a certain opportunity to learn in a way that, frankly, all the elite schools in the nation teach because that's the way to build critical thinking skills.
Well, I don't think those opportunities are limited because of them being in public schools. I think they're limited because of people's unwillingness to have the backbone to work with families and communities to be clear about what high quality educations are and to cultivate it in the schools where they live with their children to break generational curses.
Speaking as a pattern, as a parent, mm-hmm. and speaking to other parents in other neighborhoods, in terms of where you could afford to live or not, that's not happening at a lot of schools.
Right.
And that's part of the reason why people are turning to charters.
But the flip side is that they're not fully inclusive, right? Like, the idea of being able to choose a charter school is it's not really a choice. It's a lottery, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always an easy thing to do either. If you're in poverty or if you're illiterate or if you have a guidance counselor telling your child, just fill out 1 through 5 and I'll tell you what to put. You think the person's advocating for you, and they're not necessarily doing so, and not out of negative intent, but out of a lack of knowledge themselves or the number of children they have to support in that.
I absolutely agree, and I think that charters have to be really intentional about not excluding people, and that's a problem. But I think it's just as unfair to be subject to a lottery as it is to be subject to being born into poverty and having to go to a school that isn't well-funded, that is ignored, that
absolutely
is low expectations.
And this is not an indictment on charters.
You have risk either
families, but
risks either way, and the challenge I think for charters as well as for people working in neighborhood schools is how do we work together to improve these opportunities for all kids, mm-hmm. as well as for our own kids that obviously we're making our decisions based on, and to not allow something like working on a zoned school and then house prices go up and then people get moved out, or working on a charter school and that causing either of those things could potentially push people out and cause more inequality. And in America, education is supposed to be the great equalizer.
Absolutely.
I think, Khalil, you mentioned the economic downturn. I think that made this question just so that changed things for a lot of families.
Those 3,000 families, that has something to do with it.
I don't think that everybody who would have put their house for sale up between the ages of 2 and 4 are doing that. Because they can't sell them.
So people are more planted.
Yeah.
I'd like to get your reaction to this call we got from a listener, Ben Shovlin. He has 2 daughters. He lives in North Baltimore City. He is zoned for Roland Park, but he could get tuition remission at the private school where he teaches in Howard County.
So I'm kind of stuck between sending my kids to Roland Park Elementary School, which is probably the best in the city, or a private school, which is 45 minutes away, which they would have to be in the car for a total of probably 2 hours a day. And it's a tough choice. And so I'm wondering, if you have the means to be in a private school, does that mean you should take it just because you have it? Roland Park Elementary School is supposed to be great. Not only that, they'll experience diversity in terms of economic class that they won't have out in Howard County. And I want my girls to be socially responsible and have an understanding that there are all different kinds of people in this world, and they need to be able to code switch.
So he's talking about diversity. Mm-hmm. Roland Park is pretty close to evenly balanced, 47% black, 43% white, mm-hmm. or recent numbers there. Do you think that racial and economic makeup is part of what draws people to Roland Park, parents to Roland Park?
I don't think racial is necessarily the primary factor as much as it is economic. A lot of the families at Roland Park also are from different cultures, so it's not squarely down racial lines. There are also many, many cultures there, which I appreciated as a first-generation citizen to this country. That was also a factor that I considered, that when I visited this school, there were families that were clearly either speaking other languages or had accents from countries that I'm familiar with. So I think that's a big factor. But, you know, this dad has to make a decision based around his own family's values. I think concepts around diversity are always relative. When you're at a school where, although there may be diversity at first glance, but not necessarily socioeconomically, and the children who are of a lower socioeconomic background don't come from that neighborhood, that can provide other tensions as well. So again, I think people should not just make assumptions based on socioeconomic status of the school, but also be thinking about how they can support their school offering high quality instruction. So when you talk about having their child at a Howard County independent school, my initial thought is they don't live in Howard County, so how can that benefit their family? If Friends or Bryn Mawr or Gilman said, hey, we're going to give you tuition remission, then I can't say that I would be opposed to that parent or that family saying, I want my child to have access to resources that they won't have if they don't attend those schools, which is another factor. I mean, Maryland itself is a very provincial place, right? People, it's who you know and mm-hmm. where you went to school. I think sometimes there's this misnomer or yet another straw man to create a class war where there doesn't necessarily have to be one, to say if you make a choice to send your child to independent school, you are abandoning the community that you live in. And I challenge people on that because I have dedicated my entire life to providing higher quality educational options for all children, not just my children. And if I choose to send my children to the school that offers them the highest quality instruction, then that is my choice. Let me help you make sure your child's school has high quality instruction as well.
And May, in starting your charter school, mm-hmm. did the founders have, I mean, what kind of goals did founders have about diversity?
Very lofty ones.
Of course,
yes.
But be more specific.
And it was very, very hard work to realize them, and they have not been completely realized. If we're talking about our board, for example, we have an integrated board, but it doesn't necessarily exactly reflect the city's racial makeup. The district is 86% African American. It became definitely more diverse when we chose a location in Park Heights because by design our school is parent run. So 50% plus one of all the board members have to be parents and they are elected by the other parents. In terms of the body of students and the body of family, our goal was to be primarily drawing from Park Heights but additionally drawing from other areas. It seemed necessary as a community school, as both a resource and a learner from the really rich community, which is Southern Park Heights, that we wanted to focus our outreach efforts there. However, charter school law does not allow you to place location as a factor. It's only schools that have been grandfathered into the system that are allowed to do that. So you have to do it by lottery, not at all based on location. Schools that, like Stadium School, Midtown, were very early pilot schools that have different rules attached to them. And our goal is to reflect Baltimore City's student population. We have to be really intentional about that in terms of walking door to door everywhere around the neighborhood to tell people there's a school opening here. If you're interested in this kind of curriculum, join us and you can be a part of our school. But we won't know exactly who our population is until we open, or it shifts a lot. So I'd say check in with us again in about 6 months and I'll let you know how we're doing.
Stephanie, when parents you work with decide, yeah, we're going to send our kids to neighborhood school, what is it you think makes what makes the deal for them? What makes that decision for them?
Well, I think in part it's what helped me make the decision, which is that it's a nice place to be. You immediately get that sense when you enter the building, but also that you already have a network of friends who have their children there. And so your children immediately have a network of friends at school as soon as they hit the door. you know, I think and one of the biggest pieces of it is being able to call someone and say, I'm running late. Can you take home? Can you pick up my child? I'll come by your house and get them in a minute. And no, that's totally fine. And there are a number of people you could call to do that. I mean, that social network mm-hmm. is huge. And I think plays a big part of, you know, we're actually a community school. We have a full-time community site coordinator who takes on a number of different roles in the school. But, you know, community school bringing in resources for everybody. I mean, it really is like a whole package. That's what we're trying to be. Your friends are there. I mean, that I think being part of that experience is what sort of makes it attractive to people who enroll.
I know this conversation could go on a lot longer. I've got more questions, but we don't have more time, and I really want to thank you all for coming in to hash over this. Thank you.
Stephanie Sterling's daughter attends Margaret Brent Elementary Middle School in Charles Village. On Thursday, they'll have a summer social for preschool-age children to hang out and have a snack. It starts at 6:30. And May Paul helps start Creative City Public Charter School, which opens later this month in Southern Park Heights. The school is still accepting applications. We'll have a link to their website on our website. And Kalila Harris's children attend Roland Park Elementary Middle School. Please consider sharing your story with us. In particular, we'd like to hear from parents who feel their neighborhood school is underserving their children, but don't feel they have any options besides that school. What are you doing to get your child a better education? Go to linesbetweenus.org and click on Your Stories. On 88.1, I'm Sheila Cass. This is Maryland Morning. That's it for The Lines Between Us. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at WYPR.org. Have a great day.